This is Audible.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents White Sand, Volume 1 by Brandon Sanderson. The graphic novel, direct-to-graphic audio adaptation by Rick Hoskin. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Alexander Strain, Dawn Ursula, Jason B. McIntosh, Frank Britton, Yasmin Twazan, Holly Vagley, Peter Holdway, Paul Reisman, Kenyatta Rogers, Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Dwen Washington, Jacob Yeh, Michael Glenn, Zeke Alton, Lawrence Redmond, Tim Carlin, Joe Mallon, Jonathan Church, Matthew Pauly, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Chris Gennebach, Joy Jones, Tony Nam, Scott McCormick, Thomas Keegan, Nick DePinto, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Steve Wanall, Chris Stinson, Alyssa Wilmoth, Nora Ashradi, Ren Casey, David Fernandez, David Zitney, Tia Shearer, Andy Brownstein, Michael John Casey, and Chris Davenport. White Sand, Volume 1.
The wind caressed the stark dunes with a whispering touch, catching fine grains of sand between its fingers and bearing them forth like thousands of tiny charioteers. The sand, like the dunes it sculpted, was bone white. It had been bleached by the sun's harsh stare, a stare that never slackened, for here, in the empire of the white sand, the sun never set. The planet was called Taldane, and it hung in space, never turning, but still like a stone. The sun glared upon the dayside, watching the sand dunes like a jealous monarch, and ever ignoring the dark side. Two moons orbited the planet, their passage the only way to mark the hours. And down there, beneath the relentless sun, a group of white-robed figures met on the stretching sands of the Kurla region. There were dozens of them in all, standing in the natural circle of rocky protrusions that was their sacred place beside Mount Kreta. They watched, dumbfounded, as two men argued as only family can argue.
Don't tell me you intend to go through with this foolishness, Kenton. No answer? As ever. Just that scowl of contempt, as though you know better than your father. Need I remind you that I am Lord Mestral, boy, and you would do well to pay me the respect of your contemporaries.
Lord Praxton looked older than the sand itself as he stepped away from the DM's 20 gold-sashed mastrels. Though he had seen barely 60 years, Praxton's skin was dry, wrinkled like a fruit that had been left out in the sun.
Come with me.
His son, Kenton, was 19, with close-cropped blondish hair and a look of rebellious conviction in his eyes that was all too familiar to his father. He wore the white robes of a sandmaster, but unlike most others of his kind, he wore no colored sash. His sash was plain white, the sign of a student who hadn't yet been assigned a rank in the DM. Tied at his waist was another oddity, a sword. He was the only person in the group of sandmasters who was armed. His skin, too, was subtly different, darker, his inheritance from his mother's darksider genes. Praxton led Kenton away from the group, just far enough to conduct the rest of their conversation in private.
Look, boy, I have suffered your insolence and games for 8 years. The Sandlord only knows how much trouble you've caused. Why must you constantly defy me?
Perhaps because I'm good at it?
You have refused advancement 4 times now. A move that has made you, my own son, into a fool and a novelty before the rest of the Diem. And an embarrassment to me. Inept students might spend 5 years as an acolyte, but never in the history of sand mastery has anyone remained a student for 8.
Lord Mastral, once a sandmaster has accepted a rank, he's forever frozen in that place.
So? All right, boy. Despite the pain, despite the shame, I will admit that you've worked hard. The Sandlord knows you haven't any talent to speak of, but at least you did something with the small amount you have. Give up this stupid decision to run the path, and tomorrow I'll offer you the rank of Fen.
Fen is the next lowest of the Sandmaster ranks.
A rank above under Fen, yes, which you have declined now for 4 years. Thus, an improvement. A Fen you shall be, despite your shortcomings.
No. I think I want to be a Mastral.
Taisha!
Don't swear now, Father. Wait until I run the path successfully. Then what will you do?
Boy, you're inept enough to make the 100 idiots look brilliant.
8 years ago, no one thought I could even be a Sandmaster.
And now you've been offered a respectable rank in the Diem. Running the Mastral's path won't prove anything. It's meant for Mastrals, not for simple acolytes.
The law doesn't say a student cannot run it.
I won't make you a Mastral, Kenton. Even if you find all 5 spheres, I won't do it. The path is not a test or a proof. Mastrals run it if they want to, but only after they've been advanced. Your success will mean nothing. You'll never be a Mastral. You aren't even worthy to be a Sandmaster.
Preston's words burned away Kenton's doubts like water in the sun. If there was one person who could fuel Kenton's sense of defiance, it was his own father, the head of the Sandmaster Guild.
Then I'll be an acolyte until the day I die, Lord Mastral.
Don't you see, child? You can't be a Mastral. You don't have the power.
I don't believe in power, Father. I believe in ability. I can do anything a Mastral can. I just have different methods.
Different methods? A sword? No Sandmaster in all of history ever needed a weapon. You spent too long with your little friend in the tower. That's a brute's tool fit only for the vulgar profession of soldiers.
I repeat, I can do anything a Mastral can.
Then remind me, how many ribbons can you control today, boy? After 8 years of training, how many?
One.
One. Ribbons are how we control sand, boy. How we function.
Kenton knew this well. By infusing the sand with power, a long ribbon formed, which could be used as a tool, a weapon, or even as a spring to raise its user into the air in a limited form of flight. The more advanced one's abilities, the more ribbons a Mastral controlled.
And you with just one ribbon. I've never known a Mastral who couldn't control at least 15. You're telling me you can do as much with one as they can with 15?
Yes.
Why can't you see how preposterous that is?
You're right. I'll just have to prove it to you, Lord Mastral.
What? Now you listen to me, you foolish boy. The path was meant for Mastrals, and most of them don't even use it. It's too dangerous.
Kenton ignored the old man, instead approaching another Sandmaster who was standing a short distance away. His short frame cast no shadow, for the sun was directly overhead here, in the jagged rock lands south of Mount Crata. The Sandmaster was bald and had a slightly fat, oval face. Around his waist was tied the yellow sash of an Undermastral, the rank directly below Mastral. The man smiled as Kenton approached.
Are you sure you want to do this, Kenton?
Yes, Alarin, I do.
Your father's objections are well-founded. The Mastral's path was created by a group of men with inflated egos who wanted very desperately to prove themselves better than their peers. It was designed for those with massive power. Mastrals have died running it before.
I understand.
As Kenton spoke, one of the waiting group padded across the sand to speak to him.
Kenton, a moment?
What is it, Traven?
Traven had joined the DM at the same time as Kenton, but he had swiftly advanced to the level of Mastral. Even out here, in the windswept Curla, he appeared immaculate as always in his robes and golden sash. Traven had gone bald early in life and kept what hair he had close-shaven, accentuating his firm, square face.
We've been friends since we were both accepted into the Diem as children.
Traben, please don't try to talk me out of
it. No one who's run the path has ever revealed its secrets. No one. You can't know what it is you're getting yourself into out there.
It's just a race through the Kurla. How bad can that be? Lack of water, steep cliffs? That's not so much of a challenge, is it?
Not to an accomplished sand mastral, maybe, but you?
If I don't do this, Traben, my father will never see me as anything other than a failure.
And when you get yourself killed, you'll confirm he's right.
Then better dead than a coward.
I hope the Sandlord watches out for you, my friend. Because Aisha, you're gonna need as much help as you can get.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, best friend.
Traben speaks sense, you know.
I know, Ellerin, but I need to do this.
All right, then. It falls to me to mediate your run. A group of us will watch as you move through the path, evaluating your progress and making certain you don't cheat. We cannot help you unless you ask. And if we do, the intervention will end your run where it stands. You see this?
Ilorin had pulled out a small red sandstone sphere from his robes.
Yes?
There are 5 of these spheres hidden on the path. Your goal is to find all 5. You may start when I say so. You have until the moon passes behind the mountain and reappears on the other side. The test is finished the moment you either run out of time, or you find the 5th sphere.
Above, the moon circled the sky once per day, hovering just above the horizon the entire time. Soon it would pass behind Mount Kreta.
The moment the moon reappears, your run is over.
Kenton would have about an hour, 100 minutes, to run the path.
We will count the spheres you have found, and that is your score.
I understand.
You may not take your Gita with you.
As he spoke, Ilorin held out his hand to take Kenton's water bottle from his side.
Take his sword, too.
No, that is not in the rules, old man.
Rules? A true Sandmaster has no need of such a clumsy weapon.
It's not in the rules, Lord Mastral. I'm keeping it.
I'm afraid that he is right, Lord Mastral.
The victory was small, pointless even, but it gave Kenton a moment's satisfaction as the moon began to disappear behind the mountain, signaling the start of his run.
Get moving. And may the Sandlord protect you, young Kenton.
Sure. Why not?
By tradition, the Sandmasters had always been atheists, but even they might turn to the Sandlord when it came to a lost cause, like him. The Mastral's path began atop the highest point of the rock formation, a jagged spine reaching out over nothingness. Standing there, Kenton eyed the unforgiving terrain before him, its sharp chasms and unscalable overhanging walls, all dabbled with the residue of windblown sand. There were eyes on him, watching from the high peaks that surrounded this unforgiving parcel of land, rising atop spiraling ribbons of charged sand.
Okay. Stay calm. You can do this. As Mother would say...
Kenton changed dialect, speaking the words in his mother's own Darksider tongue, one he spoke as well as he spoke Daysider.
Let the world guide you, or you'll always be fighting a foe you cannot hope to beat.
The advice was little comfort. Above, the moon passed behind the mountain, signaling the start of Kenton's challenge. As it did, Kenton began to move, watched from afar by Ilorin and others. For the first few steps, he moved quickly, fired up to succeed and show his father how capable he was. But then he slipped.
Whoa!
And the enormity of the danger struck him as he saw how far he would have dropped had he not recovered. Then, with more care, Kenton moved on, searching for the first of the hidden spheres.
Remind me again why I thought this would be a smart idea.
Eight years ago, Kenton had just been a child, scared by the stern adults who stood before himself and the other applicants in the Kurla Sands. A dozen forms waited to be tested, clothed in identical brown robes. They had their hoods pulled up against the wind, but it was easy to tell from their small frames that they were children like Kenton, barely into their second decade of life. The boys and girls stood uncomfortably, shuffling with nervous feet as the winds whipped at their robes. They knew how important this day was, the significance of what was about to happen.
Present your sand.
The command came from a white-robed mastrel called Tyndall, a senior mastrel who looked as old as the rocks protruding from the sand around them. As one, each child pulled a handful of white sand from within the bag they had with them. They had to hold tightly to keep the increasingly powerful wind from tearing the sand away and scattering it across the Kurla, Kenton recalled. His father had frowned, as if his simple displeasure could force the wind to abate. This testing took place close to the mountain Kreda, one of the few places in the Kurla where stone jutted free from the sand. Here, the wind was usually blocked by both mountain and surrounding cliffs. Further down the line, two mastrels had tested a boy the same age as Kenton, instructing him in quiet voices that were almost lost upon the wind.
Well, child, tell the Lord Mastrel your name.
Traben, sir?
Traben? You're the son of a lower sandmaster, aren't you?
Yes, Lord Mastrel.
Now, show us your mastery so far.
I'll try.
The boy stared at the sand in his hand for a moment, a brief flutter of his hood revealing the look of concentration on his face.
You are aware that you may begin, Draven.
Cupped protectively in the boy's open palm, the sand began to glow faintly for a moment, then turned a dull black like the charred remnants of a fire. Senior Mastrel Tyndall nodded sagely, meeting Lord Praxton's gaze.
Ah, a good start.
Yes, he displays at least moderate power.
The Lord Mastrel will find a place for you in the Diem, where you will learn proper mastery of sand.
The testing continued, some of the boys producing glows similar to Traben's, some barely managing to turn the sand black. Overall, however, it was an unusually strong batch. They would bring much strength to the Diem. It was a sudden flash, one so bright that the onlookers blinked in surprise, trying to clear the bright afterimage from their eyes. The two mastrels performing the test stood stunned before a small child with a shaking hand.
A remarkable display. I haven't seen one so powerful in years. Who is that?
Dryl, son of Rhinst Ryle.
A profitable catch then, in more than one way.
Eventually, it had been Kenton's turn.
I believe you know the last would-be acolyte? Your son, Kenton?
As his youngest child, Kenton was the last in a long line of disappointments, not a single one of whom had exhibited any talent for sand mastery. It was an unvoiced mark of shame that Praxton, the Lord Mastrel, had been unable to produce a single sand master child. It was unheard of, scandalous even. Rumors abounded that it was because his wife was from the dark side, and that she had polluted the family line forever, poisoning the family tree at its roots. Young Kenton had heard the whispers, and he wanted more than anything to prove those rumors wrong, to prove everyone wrong.
Proceed.
Yes, sir. I'll show you.
The boy looked at his sand, a look of total concentration on his young face. Praxton held his breath, waiting, excited in spite of himself. The boy stared at the sand, his teeth clenched. Praxton felt his excitement dribble away as nothing happened. Finally, the sand gave a very weak glimmer, and then it faded to a dun black.
Did I see something, or imagine it?
All of Kenton's pent-up determination and righteousness had been channeled into that one spark, and it had proved to be no substitute for actual ability. Though he knew he betrayed no look of disappointment, Praxton felt the senior mastrels around him grow stiff with anticipation.
I'm sorry, Lord Mastrel.
It's nothing. Not every boy is meant to be a sandmaster.
But this was your last son.
Yes. Take them away.
So this was Praxton's legacy. A Lord Mastrel who couldn't produce a single sandmaster child. He would be remembered as the man who married a woman from Darkside and thereby sullied his line.
Those who have any skill may enter the Diem. The rest will choose another profession.
Quickly now, out of the wind, all of you.
The Sandmasters moved quickly, their feet sinking easily into the swirling, fine-grained dunes beneath. They were eager to seek refuge from the furious elements. One form, however, did not follow the white-robed Mastrals. Small and slight of frame, Kenton remained in the increasingly violent wind.
I will be a Sandmaster!
A short distance away, the line of retreating Mastrals and would-be inductees paused, several heads turning in surprise.
You have no talent for Sandmastery, boy. Go home.
You saw! The law says I have enough!
You've studied the law, have you, boy?
I have.
Then you know that as Lord Mastral, I am the only one who can grant advancement in the Diem. And it is I who must give his approval before any Sandmaster can increase in rank.
Every rank but the first!
You... You will not find it easy in the Diem, boy.
Kenton did not move. Lord Praxton was increasingly aware of how bad this looked for him, to be challenged by his own son out here in this sacred place.
By sands, see reason.
He needed to end this now before it reflected any worse upon him.
Fine. You may join if that is your desire.
It is. Thank you, Lord Mastral.
Join and fail is what he had meant, of course. Join, fail, and wash out. That's what he had really wanted to say, Kenton suspected. So here he was, a failure in his father's eyes, washing out in the most suicidal manner he could envision, tackling the Mastral's path, an almost impossible challenge for even the most adept Sandmaster. But if he was going to fail, he wouldn't make it easy. Kenton had spotted the first sphere, hidden amid jagged points of rocks, sharp enough to pierce a man's body. Kenton took a firm grip on a rock above and then leaned down, stretching out as far as he could and reaching for the sphere.
Come on.
For an advanced Sandmaster, the operation would have been the casting of a single ribbon to pluck the sphere from its ledge. But Kenton chose to rely on physical prowess rather than exert his sand mastery.
Got you!
Kenton pulled himself back up to the pathway above. That was one. Kenton put the spear safely in his bag and moved on, keen eyes searching the rocks.
Hey! You want humiliation? You may just as well ride high on the conch rather than cower behind it.
If they heard him, the other sand masters did not answer. Kenton quickly found the first two spheres. The red sandstone globes had been so easy to locate, in fact, that he began to worry that he had missed something.
Draven, you will be disappointed. You thought this would be hard.
Despite his good humor, Kenton knew that he didn't have time to go back and recheck his steps. Either he found them all on the first try, or he failed. That determination drove Kenton forward as he ran across the top of a rock ledge. Around him, the strange formations of stone jutted from the sand floor, some rising hundreds of feet into the air, others barely breaking the surface. The scenery was familiar to him. The Sandmasters came to this place every year to choose new members and award merits to old ones. It was almost a sacred place, though Sandmasters tended to be irreligious. None of the Kurla's Kirstian inhabitants came to this place. Its sand was far too shallow to sustain a town. In fact, few even knew of its existence. It was a place of the Sandmasters. And for 4 years, it had been a place of embarrassment, to Kenton at least. 4 years of standing before the entire population of the Diem, presenting himself for an advancement that would not be granted. He knew that most of the others considered him a fool, an arrogant fool. At times, he wondered if they might be right. Why did he keep pushing for a rank he did not deserve? Why not be satisfied with what Praxton was willing to give him? Life in the Diem had not been easy for Kenton. Sandmaster society was ancient and stratified. New students were immediately given positions of leadership and favor based on their power. Those with lesser ability were made the virtual servants and attendants of those more talented. And such was a situation that continued up through the entire Sandmaster hierarchy. To them, power was everything. Kenton had watched the other Acolants in his group and seen how easily Sand Mastery came to them. They didn't have to stretch themselves, didn't have to learn how to control their sand. Their answer to any problem was to throw a dozen ribbons at it and hope it went away. Today, Kenton intended to prove that there was a better way.
Aisha!
He stopped abruptly. He had run out of ground. Directly in front of him, the sand-covered earth ended in a steep chasm. The chasm sunk as deep as his social standing in the DM, a reminder of how much this moment mattered to him. It rose again, perhaps 50 feet away. He could barely make out a flag flapping on the other side of the gorge, a marker to indicate the direction he was to take.
And so the real test begins.
He reached down and grabbed a handful of sand from the ground. Another sandmaster, one more powerful, could have leapt the chasm, propelling himself through the air on a stream of sand. Kenton didn't have that option. So, instead, he took a few paces back and then ran straight for the edge, jumping off the cliff.
Here goes!
He plummeted toward the ground, his white robes flapping in the sudden wind. He didn't look down, instead concentrating on the sand clutched in his fist.
Come on! Do this!
The sand burst to life. With an explosion of light, the sand changed from bone white to shimmering mother of pearl. Kenton opened his hand as he fell, commanding the sand to move.
Go! Go!
It shot forward, forming into a ribbon of light that extended from his palm toward the swiftly approaching dunes below. When the sand had reached the ground, he commanded it to gather mass from the dunes below and move back up. A second later, there was a shimmering line of mastered sand extending from Kenton to the ground.
Got you!
He was still falling, but as he commanded the sand to push, his descent slowed. The sand worked like a shimmering coil, slowing him more and more as he approached the ground. He came to a stop just a foot above the surface of the dunes, then stepped off the ribbon and dropped to the ground. As he did so, he released the ribbon from his control, and the shimmering sand immediately darkened and fell dead. It was no longer white. It was now a dull black, its energy spent. Another sandmaster, one more proficient with his abilities, would have done things in a flashier way, perhaps even smoother. But Kenton had control, and that ensured he could do things that seemed almost impossible to his contemporaries, who commanded dozens of ribbons to his one. Kenton jogged along the bottom of the ravine, forcing himself not to slow despite the fatigue of sandmastery. He was beginning to regret his insistence on bringing his sword. The weapon seemed to grow more and more heavy as he ran, dragging at his side.
This is costing precious time. 60 minutes gone already.
He licked his lips, which were growing dry. Sand mastery didn't just take strength. It required water, sucking the precious liquid from the body of the sandmaster. A sandmaster had to be careful not to master to the point that his body took permanent damage from dehydration. Kenton reached the second cliff and looked up, gathering his strength. In the distance, he could see a group of white-robed forms, the Mastrals, evaluating his progress.
Look at him down there. It's painful to watch.
He won't be able to ascend the cliff. It's too high.
His powers are an embarrassment to us all. His father should be...
Shh! Words carry on the wind.
So I should be silent, Aloran? Even when it's a truth, his father already knows?
Lord Praxton will reach that decision. He's humoring the boy, that's all.
The evaluating Mastrals were too far away to be heard by Kenton, but even so, he could sense the finality in their postures.
You think I've failed already?
They assumed he was stuck. It was well known that Kenton could barely lift himself a few feet with his sand. Of course, that much in itself was amazing. No other sandmaster could do so much with only a single ribbon. Amazing or not, however, it wasn't enough to get him to the top of the cliff, which was at least 100 feet tall. Ignoring his doubting audience, Kenton reached down and grabbed another handful of sand.
Where are you?
He called it to life, feeling it begin to squirm and shimmer in his hand.
Ah! There! You always are.
The sand shone brightly, more brightly even than that of a mastral. Kenton could only control one ribbon, but it was by far the most powerful ribbon any sandmaster had ever created.
This had better work.
He let the sand slip forward, dropping to the ground like a stream of water. There, he gathered more sand, calling to life as much as he could handle, enough to make a thin string, perhaps 20 feet long. This time, however, he didn't form the sand into the ribbon. Instead, he created a step.
Okay, so I can't lift myself the way the others do.
The higher a sandmaster lifted himself in the air, the more sand was required, and Kenton could only control a relatively small amount. He could, however, hold himself in place.
Don't rush it. Let it happen.
He stepped onto his small platform of sand, pressing his body against the rough stone cliff face. Then, holding on as best he could and not looking down, he began to inch sideways, dropping sand off one edge of the platform and replacing it on the other. Above, the invigilating mastrels watched with a mixture of amusement and frank astonishment.
Is he using his sand like a staircase?
I believe so! And here in a challenge where speed is the order of the hour.
Perhaps we should help him. Relieve him of this foolishness before he hurts himself. Aloran, what do you think?
No. Let Kenton have his moment. When he fails, he must know it was his failure and not from our intervention. It's what his father wants.
And what if he dies? Is that also what his father wants?
We shall hold ourselves for now. He must request our assistance, but if he falls, we will catch him. If we cannot, then we are no more worthy of being mastrels than Kenton.
Below, Kenton was concentrating on making his sand cling to the cliff wall. He slipped it into the cracks and clung to the rock's imperfections, rather than pushing it upwards against the ground, creating instead a single step. Slowly, Kenton moved to the side, sloping his platform of sand just enough that he moved in a diagonal direction up the wall. High above, the mastrels watched with growing discomfort.
This is becoming embarrassing. The boy's a failure. 8 years and this is all he can do.
At least he's innovative.
This innovation we do not need. He looks ridiculous. Sandmasters are supposed to flow and dance, soaring through the air in clouds of radiant sand. Not creep up the side of a wall like a sleepy sandling.
Still, it's working. He's almost at the top of the chasm.
And now he's stopping.
Exhausted, do you think?
I don't know about Kenton, but my patience certainly is.
Kenton had stopped, but not from exhaustion. Or at least not solely from exhaustion. He had noticed something, a small ledge about 10 feet down the side of the cliff. Perched on the ledge was a small red sphere.
There you are. And you'd have stayed hidden too if I'd moved any faster.
Kenton climbed to the top of the ledge, then shook his rectangle of sand into a ribbon and sent it to collect the sphere. Guided by his commands, the rope of sand wrapped around the sphere and brought it back to its master.
You see? That's three! Just two left!
Unfortunately, judging by the position of the moon, he had barely 30 minutes left. The group of mastrels watched him with dumbfounded expressions as he jogged past the marking flag and located the next one in the distance. The rocks were growing more and more frequent now, forming caverns and walls of stone.
Where are you?
Kenton's eyes searched for any hints of red as he hurried along the high path. The next sphere couldn't be far away. If he guessed right, the path wound in a circle, and he was nearing the place where he had started.
You have to be here. Unless I missed you entirely. Aisha, I couldn't have, could I?
A short distance away, several lines of glimmering sand marked his silent followers. True to mastral form, each of them was making a huge display of power, gathering as many ribbons of sand around them as they could manage. While it wasn't actually possible to fly with sand mastery, powerful mastrels could launch themselves in extended leaps that could span hundreds of feet. Each jumping mastrel left a trail of sand behind him, sand pushing against the ground to form a means of propulsion. The Mastrals stopped atop a pillar of rock a short distance away. Kenton slowed his jog to a walk, watching them with careful eyes. The place they landed looked too predetermined to be random, which meant...
The sphere's close. You're baiting me with it, wanting to see what I'll do.
A short distance away, a large wall-like section of rock extended from the sand. It was filled with fist-sized holes, each one extending back into darkness. With a sinking feeling, Kenton realized that this was his next test.
No fair! Any one of those holes could hold a sphere!
If he had been able to control 24 ribbons, searching through the holes would have taken no time at all. However, using his single ribbon to do the same would probably take longer than he had left. Yet, it appeared as if that were his only choice.
Ha!
Kenton brought a handful of sand to life.
Maybe I'll be lucky and choose the right hole first time. Yeah, because luck's been so kind to me up till now. Or maybe there's another way.
Kenton's eyes skimmed the rock wall. One thing he had learned from his lack of ability, ironically, was that sometimes sand mastery wasn't the answer. His eyes almost passed over the solution before his brain registered it. A small pile of black sand. There were only two things that could change sand from white to black.
Is it water or sand mastery?
He smiled, approaching the discolored sand. It wasn't pure black, more of a dull gray. It had probably been recharging in the sunlight for a couple of hours now. A few more, and it would be completely indistinguishable from the white sand around it. Kenton raised his eyes from the sand, looking at the wall directly above it. Just over his head, he noticed a trail of black grains sitting on the lip of one of the holes.
Aha! Let's see what's been turning the grains here.
Kenton reached into the hole, retrieving the red sandstone sphere that was hidden in its depths. Though there was a smile on his lips when he turned to look back at the Mastrals, inwardly, Kenton was worried.
If the Sandmaster who had hidden the spheres hadn't been careless, if he had used his hands instead of sand mastery, I'd never have found the sphere.
Still, he couldn't help feeling a sense of satisfaction as the Mastrals jumped away, twisting ribbons of sand, carrying them into the air.
Just one left!
If Kenton found it, he would have succeeded in a task that baffled many Mastrals. As he moved to begin running again, Kenton noticed one of the Mastrals had stayed behind. Even though the column of rock was far away, somehow Kenton knew that the stooped-over form belonged to his father. Kenton stared up at Praxton's face.
Pitiable. Your failure will be the talk of the Diem, Kenton, and it will be my failure for raising you. But you've come this far. Our mutual embarrassment is almost complete.
He could not hear the words, but Kenton knew from the way he was looking at him that his father, the Lord Mastral, was not pleased. Kenton stared at him for a long moment, trying to project his defiance.
I'm doing this! You haven't beaten that out of me yet!
Eventually, Praxton raised his hands, summoning a dozen strings of sand from the floor below. They twisted around him like living creatures, their bright, translucent glow shifting from color to color in the way of mastered sand. When Praxton jumped, the ribbons threw him into the air, and Kenton was left alone beside the rock wall.
Just one more.
Kenton was running out of time. Not only would the moon soon reappear, but he was beginning to feel the effect of his sand mastery. His mouth was parched, refusing to salivate, and his eyes were beginning to burn. His brow, which had been slick with sweat during the beginning of the run, was now crusted with salty residue. The price the Sandmaster had to pay, the fuel that his art burned, was the water from his own body.
Remember the lessons you were taught, Kenton. A dry mouth and eyes are the first signs that a Sandmaster is close to doing permanent damage to him or herself.
The first thing a Sandmaster learned was to keep track of his water, to pace himself so he didn't overmaster. Students who even approached the point of overmastery were severely punished.
Damn them for taking my Guido.
Without the water bottle, he risked dehydration through overmastery. But no doubt that risk was all part of the Mastral's path. Kenton cast such thoughts aside. It would be over soon. He looked around at the rising rock walls.
I'm almost back at the start. Don't tell me I missed the last sphere.
Up ahead, Kenton could just barely make out the rock plateau where he had begun the path. The Mastral stood atop it, waiting for him to approach. Kenton paused, leaning against the smooth rock wall. His breath was beginning to come with more difficulty. Both running and sand mastery sapped strength, and his dry throat made each breath painful. The Mastrals held his guidon and its water. He anticipated that first drink with such ferocity that he almost didn't care that...
I failed. There's nowhere left to look, and no time to go back.
He had done well. 4 out of 5 was a respectable number. Some of the Mastrals, he knew, had only found 3. But finding 4 would prove nothing, not to his father. Praxton wouldn't see the 4 spheres his son had found, but the one he had missed. His eyes were dry, so much so that it stung to keep them open. He probably only had 10 minutes left, no time to turn back. That was barely enough time to make it back to the rock wall where he had found the previous sphere. He opened his eyes and stood upright.
You've done better than anyone expected. Keep telling yourself that, Kenton, when your father throws you out of the Diem for good.
Kenton kicked away the wind-blown sand that had gathered at his feet, striding out into the middle of the basin.
So stupid! My father is as harsh as the sands themselves. He would never have let me become a Mastral, even if I'd found all... 5?
Pausing, he regarded the strange rock formation around him. The sides were smooth and steep, almost forming a pit with a sand-filled bottom, perhaps 50 feet across. How many years had it taken the Curla's dry winds to carve such an odd bowl-like formation? Kenton froze, his abrupt stop kicking up a small spray of sand. As his eyes had scanned the basin, they fell on something so dumbfounding it almost caused him to trip in surprise. There, sitting in the middle of the circular flooring of sand, was a speck of red. It sat like a drop of blood, stark against the white background. Ripples in the sand had caused him to miss it earlier, but now there was no mistaking the red sphere. Kenton looked up at the Mastrals with confusion. They stood along the rim of the basin, their white robes fluttering as if in unison before the wind.
Something's not right. It can't be this easy. There has to be more to the test. Doesn't there?
Surely the last sphere should have been the most difficult to find, not the most obvious. As if in answer to his doubts, Kenton felt the sand begin to shift beneath his feet.
Aisha! Whoa!
He leapt backwards, but the whole section of ground below his feet was beginning to shift. The sand near the sphere began to churn like boiling water. There was something beneath it, something rising.
I'm standing on deep sand.
The sand-filled pit must go down further than he had assumed. Few people, not even the local Kurzdians, were foolish enough to wander onto deep sand. A black form burst from the sand, burying the sphere in a wave of sand. Kenton gasped in amazement as he regarded the creature that slid from the ground. Sand streamed like water off the 20-foot-tall monstrosity's carapace as it rose into the air. Its body was formed of bulbous, chitinous segments stacked on top of one another. A pair of arms sprouted from each waist, where segments met, arms that were tipped with thick, jagged claws. Its head, if that was the right term, was little more than a box with deep black spots instead of eyes, with no visible mouth. And worst of all, Kenton knew that the bulk of the creature's body was still hidden beneath the sands. Kenton was so busy staring that he was almost crushed as the creature swiped a claw in his direction.
Whoop, whoop.
Kenton dodged, dashing toward the wall of the basin. The sandling's body was huge, perhaps 10 feet wide.
Got to stay out of its way, which may be easier said than done.
Kenton's body, invigorated by adrenaline and excitement, no longer responded sluggishly. His heart began to race, but his mind worked even faster. He had read of deep sandlings, seen drawings of them, but he had never visited deep sand in person. Kenton could barely see the thousands of tiny hair-like tentacles that lined the beast's carapace, the means by which it moved, But all the while, the creature seemed to glide through the sand as if it were water. Kenton dropped to the sand, barely rolling out of the way as a claw swiped toward him. The creature was incredibly fast. There was a reason deep sand was regarded with terror. The creatures that lurked within its depths were said to be nearly indestructible.
Keep moving, boy. What would Gremt say?
Kenton rolled to his feet, thankful for the hours he had spent sparring with soldiers from the tower.
Thanks, Gremt. Your training just saved my life. For another 2 seconds, at least. Now let's use something else you taught me.
Kenton's movements were quick and dexterous as he whipped his sword free with his left hand and grabbed a handful of sand with the other.
Okay, let's see here. See what you can do.
Lord Mastral, you must call a stop to this now. Your son will die if you don't.
The rules are clear, Elorin. Kenton must request the intervention.
I fear that if we don't act soon, your son will no longer be able to make such a request.
The rules remain clear, Elorin.
In the deep sand below, Kenton was focused on his monstrous foe. He saw the eye spots on each side of the creature's head, realizing that it would not be easy to surprise. But he recalled that sandlings were said to have poorly developed sight. Their true sense was the sand itself. The Kurstians said deep sandlings could actually speak with the sand, though few from Lossand gave credence to their mysticisms. From high above, Ilorin's voice called to Kenton.
We cannot pull you out unless you request it, Kenton! Ask us to bring you out, please!
No. I have to do this. My father will never be satisfied, not even with perfection. He never is.
Kenton deflected another attack with his raised sword. The creature's strength was such that his parry barely seemed to have any effect, but it did allow him to dodge the attack just long enough to strike.
Better dead than a coward!
Even as he turned, Kenton raised his fist, commanding his sand forward. The sand tore out of his palm, streaking toward the sandling's head. It extended like a spear from Kenton's hand, leaving a glowing trail behind. Kenton might not be able to control dozens of lines at once, but when it came to a single ribbon, he was unmatched. No sandmaster could move sand with half as much speed or precision. The sand snapped against the creature's shell ahead and immediately lost its luster, spraying to the sides like a stream of water hitting a stone wall.
I saw.
Kenton stood in confusion, so stunned that the creature's next attack took him in the side, throwing him back against the stone wall and ripping a deep gash in his shoulder. Kenton's sword dropped to the sand, slipping from stunned fingers.
Terrakin! It's coated in terrakin!
Terrakin was a naturally occurring substance, and it was the one thing that was impervious to sand mastery. Kenton checked himself. Blood was beginning to flow from his shoulder. Terrakin creatures were supposed to be extremely rare, only the most ancient and feared of deep sandlings. Creatures said to be protected by the Sandlord himself had Terrakin shells. How had one come to live here, in the middle of shallow sands and rock formations? All sandlings, whether from the deep sands or not, had one powerful weakness, water. The liquid could dissolve their carapaces, melting away their shell and skin, leaving behind nothing but sludge. Which meant that the final challenge in the Mastral's path was a test to locate water, something he should have planned for right at the start instead of proceeding blindly forward without it, as if he couldn't plan for dehydration.
Stupid, stupid!
There was always water in the sand somewhere if you looked for the Dorim vines or sought out the smaller creatures that resided below the surface. Dorim vines appeared only when you poured water into the sand. But even without a guidon, that was still possible. A sandmaster was resourceful. Even the saliva in one's mouth might be enough at the start of the run. Not now, however. The Mastral's path wasn't a test of endurance. It was a test of preparedness. And Kenton had left it too late to prepare.
Forget it. Remember Gramp's first rule. Just stay alive.
He was moving increasingly slowly, and he could feel himself weakening. Trying to ignore the pain of his shoulder, he stooped as he ran, grabbing another handful of sand. As the next attack came, Kenton used the mastered sand to give himself a boost, jumping high into the air and tumbling over the swiping claws. Kenton dropped heavily to the sand, then scrambled in the direction of the sandling's original position. Somewhere in that sand was the sphere.
I don't need water because I'm not going to kill you. I just need that sphere.
Once he had that, he could relent and ask Iloran to pull him out. It sounded so easy. He released his sand, dropping it to the ground, black and stale.
Where are you?
Kenton placed his hand on the ground near where he had last seen the sphere. He called ribbon after ribbon to life, commanding them to jump away and then releasing them.
Go! Go! Again! Again! Again!
Sand flew from the ground where he knelt. He commanded and released ribbons in such quick succession that it almost seemed like he could control more than one at a time. But the sandling did not leave him to his digging. Kenton's jump had confused it, but it quickly reoriented itself. It came at him, but Kenton continued to dig until the last moment.
I shot! Go!
He dashed away, running desperately. He could feel the dryness on his skin, and each time he blinked, his lids seemed to stick to his eyes. His lungs were beginning to burn, and his breaths came painfully. He was approaching the last of his water reserves. He would probably even be chastised for going this far. For the good of the DM, he mustn't even come close to overmastery, the familiar teaching claimed. It was time to give up.
Alaric!
Just as he made the determination to escape, however, he saw it. Resting beside the far wall of the basin was a speck of red, brighter than the dark drops of his own blood which ran behind him.
No! Wait!
Kenton switched directions, ducking beneath the sandling's arms and dashing so close to its body that he could smell the sulfurous pungency of its carapace. And as he ran by the creature, feeling the sand slither beneath his feet from the sandling's motion, he noticed an incredulous sight. There, trapped between two bowl-like chinks in the sandling's carapace was...
Another sphere? But that's impossible!
Impossible unless there were not five spheres on the path, but six.
What is he doing down there?
Getting himself killed. We must intervene.
If we do, Kenton would never forgive us.
And if we don't, he won't be alive to complain.
I am conducting this test. I will say when.
Understood, Master Laloran. I just hope you don't regret your decision.
Above, among the watching Mastrels, Lord Praxton said nothing. He was a hard man who had never shown any faith in his son's abilities. But could he really watch him commit suicide like this? In the valley below, Kenton was using his hands to dig in the sand, his mastering abilities almost spent. His fingers found something round and hard.
Yes!
He pulled the sphere free, looking at it with a frown, then turned his eyes back on the sandling. From this angle, he could see the object caught in its shell distinctly. A red sphere, just like the five he had already found. A sixth. Kenton dropped the sphere into the pouch at his side, then turned eyes up to the edge of the cliff. Directly above, he could see the faces of 20 Mastrels looking down at him. He could escape now. His time was probably all but up anyway. He had won. He had found all five spheres.
So what am I waiting for?
For some reason, he turned his eyes back to the sandling. Its shell and skin were Turkan.
But what about its insides?
His father wouldn't be satisfied with perfection. He never was. Praxton would demand more.
You want more? I'll give you more!
What did he say?
The dehydration has got to him. He's no longer making sense. Aloran, you must show responsibility.
I...
No. The idiot boy has made his decision. Do not intervene.
All eyes turned to Lord Praxton, the unquestioned leader of the Sand Mastrels.
Yes, Lord Mastrel.
Kenton brought his sand to life, whipping it past the creature and using it to snatch his discarded sword from the sand floor. The blade flashed through the air, carried on fingers of sand.
Yes!
Kenton caught it as he ducked beneath the sandling's first attack, grabbing a second handful of sand as he came up barely inches from the creature's chest. Kenton slammed his sword into the creature's side. The blade slipped off a segment of carapace and crunched through the less protected line of skin, digging deeply into the soft area between plates.
Come on!
Kenton jammed the weapon in with all the strength he had left. Suddenly, his sword jerked, then ripped free from his hands, blasted backward by a powerful force. He had pierced the skin. Kenton caught a face full of acrid gas that Sandlings had instead of blood. Just before one of the monster's legs caught him full in the chest, flinging him into the air. Even as he hurtled away from the creature, Kenton called the sand in his fist to life. He commanded it forward, driving it with all of his skill. Kenton slammed against the rock wall at the same time that his sand hit the creature's chest, yet did not release control of his ribbon. He felt his body slump to the ground, but ignored the pain, commanding his sand to find the cut to wiggle past the Turkin carapace into the creature's cavernous insides.
Come on, visualize.
He had to fight against air pressure and his own approaching unconsciousness, but he refused to release the sand.
What is he doing? He cannot hope to stop a sandling with one ribbon.
Kenton is skilled.
No one is that skilled, Master Alorin.
Kenton felt his sand ribbon break through the monster's carapace where his sword had made the hole, pushing through the escaping blood that fizzed in the air. With a final surge of effort, Kenton ordered the ribbon around wild, slicing it through organs inside the monster's chest. The sandling began to shake and spasm as Kenton commanded the sand to move vaguely upwards. A second later, Kenton found the head, and the sandling grew rigid in a sudden motion, throwing sand in all directions. A moment later, the creature slumped to the side, its corpse sinking slightly in the sand before coming to a rest. Kenton forced himself to his feet and started to walk his way to his prize.
Come on. One foot in front of the next.
Kenton didn't know where he found the strength to stumble to his feet and cross the sand. In a daze, he retrieved his sword and used it to pry the sixth sphere free from the creature's carapace. Above, the invigilating Mastrels watched in shock as Kenton raised the recovered sphere from the Sandling's corpse.
He's found six spheres. It's impossible!
I laid five. Where did the sixth come from?
That does not matter now. Can't you see the boy is exhausted? He needs water.
As Ilorin spoke, down in the valley below, Kenton flopped to the ground with sheer exhaustion. That of his father's hard, angry face looking down from high above as the silvery edge of the moon began to peek out from behind Mount Crata.
Water! Bring the lad water!
He's pushed himself to the extreme. Thank the Sandlord he survived. You must be proud of your son, Lord Mastral.
Must I?
Chris woke slowly, a method which was, in her estimation, by far the best way. She stretched lethargically, her mind still clouded with images of dreams that were only just beyond memory. She stumbled from the bunk, only half aware of the ship's rocking motion beneath her, and threw open the shutters to her cabin. The world exploded with light. Chris stumbled back against her bunk. Light surrounded her, drilling through her eyes directly into her brain. She threw an arm in front of her face in an attempt to ward off the burning whiteness.
Come on. Come on, where are they? Where are my... Oh, there!
She located the thick, darkened spectacles and placed them on her face.
There. Just calm down. Calm down. Breathe.
The burning didn't stop, of course. The afterimage of what she'd seen remained like a sparkling sheet in front of her, and her mind continued to throb. As she lay on the bunk, however, her teeth clenched against the pain, her vision slowly returned, and the torment lessened. Eventually, she risked opening her eyes again, though she didn't dare look out the window. The cabin, her home for the past 2 months, appeared before her. Even with the darkened spectacles, the light was much brighter than she was accustomed to. They must have finally passed through the border ocean's mists and crossed over to Dayside.
Shella, why didn't someone warn me the sun would be this bright?
Duchess.
You may enter.
A tall, broad-shouldered figure entered, her bodyguard. His deep brown skin darkened even further by the effects of her spectacles. He wore a simple form-fitting shirt and a pair of canvas trousers, as well as darkened spectacles like her own.
You look horrible.
It's the illumination, Beon. We've left the fog behind, I presume?
Yes, several hours ago. You should make an appearance on the deck. We've sighted land, and the men are anxious.
Let me put something on first.
I'll wait outside.
Now, what to wear? Blue trousers and... a sweater. Jackets or no jackets? No jacket. It's supposed to be warmer here on Dayside.
Now dressed, she checked her face in the cabin's small mirror.
Oh!
Bayon was right. She did look horrible. Her long black hair was tangled from sleep, and it was obvious, even through the spectacles, that her eyes had been watering from the pain. She hurriedly pulled a brush through her hair, trying to make herself look at least presentable.
You're a duchess. People expect you to look like one.
She walked out into the light. The first thing she noticed was the burning sphere of brilliance in the sky. She found herself staring at it before her pained eyes forced her to look away. She blinked, tears forming in her eyes, but she could still feel it above her, blazing like an enormous eye. She immediately began to sweat, despite her relatively thin clothing. She had read stories of the sun, and even believed some of them, but it was different to personally experience its power.
So, this is what a star looks like up close. It's a wonder that anything can survive in its constant heat.
She could actually feel it burning. Even across the incredible distance, she could feel its heat on her skin like a hearth fire. The deck was busy with men. The sailors, excited to arrive after 2 months of sailing, were enthusiastically climbing riggings and doing other nautical things Chris didn't understand. The ship had been half-drifting for a month, letting the powerful border ocean current pull it from dark side to day side. The ship had been spun through spinning maelstroms of wind, and only the clever sailing, and even more clever ship design, had allowed them to survive.
Land ho, Duchess!
I see it, Skipper!
She did, albeit through pained and watering eyes. Three men, dressed in nondescript trousers and coats, stood beside Bayon, her bodyguard, further along the deck. Their skin, like Chris's, was dark after the fashion of Elis, but none of them approached Bayon's deep blackness. None could approach his height either, the nearest standing a full 6 inches shorter than the massive foreigner. Bayon came from Iaria, a kingdom on the northern end of Darkside, seat of the dynasty itself. She'd never found a way to tactfully ask him how he had come to be a member of the Elysian military, especially since crossing dynastic borders was expressly forbidden by law.
Hey! Watch out, miss!
Sorry!
When she reached the men at the rail, the three soldiers put 1 foot forward and bowed. One man, Flenid, stood at their lead. Typical of the Elysian military, all were of noble blood, but they were also all at least third sons. Bayon didn't bow. The mercenary simply continued to stare at the dark line in the distance, a line that was quickly resolving into a series of cliffs.
I half thought we would fall off the side of the world, like the stories claim.
Bayon, really? At worst, our ship would have gotten caught in the wrong water current and carried us right back to Darkseid.
I know.
Flenid, the oldest of the soldiers, had probably seen 22 years,